You're listening to Marriage Takeover with Eric and Tamika Thompson, helping to enrich your marriage.
What's happening, everybody? Listen, glad to have you join me tonight. And we're about to have a conversation because, I mean, obviously everything that's been happening in the world has sparked conversations all over the world. You have folks protesting in Paris, in London, in countries that are notorious for a lot of different things, but they're protesting. And of course, you see what's happening here in America. And yesterday, Eric and Tamika Thompson, my guests, we were having a conversation. And so as they started talking about the impact of what happened with Mr. Floyd, we were talking about the impact, I guess, with your daughter and how she was responding to it. And I thought, as you all were talking about it, you shared kind of like the conversation you all had in house. And it caused me to say, well, I wanted to bring everybody else in on the conversation a little bit because it was so good. Well, anyway, just to let you all know, my guest tonight, we are actually 100% live. Normally, I don't go 100% live, but we are 100% live. It is 9:22 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And so we're going to talk about this because I believe what they talked about and what they shared is something that a lot of people feel. And we have so many layers and so many conflicting thoughts about this. It's really powerful. So these are my good friends, Eric and Tamika Thompson. I've known them for many, many years. They have been a part of my productions when I first started back in the early 2000s. They were in the productions and we've worked together in a variety of capacities over the years. And so it's just amazing to see, you know, how good folks, you know, when you stay connected to good folks, you can always have good conversation. And that's what I'm most appreciative about. They have a marriage ministry called the Marriage Takeover. And so that's what this, normally this would be your marriage takeover time right now. So I guess I took over the marriage takeover. So, but you know, the thing is that what's really powerful about this is that, you know, these are conversations that actually married couples have. And with the, with these conversations that married couples have, I think it really, it's cool. So anyway, everybody, welcome Eric and Tamika Thompson. We're going to talk about this tonight, racism conversations in the home. And you all had one. You're talking about I decided to go live. And I said it went blank on me. So you all were having a conversation about your daughter Aaliyah and when she was her response to all of this stuff that has been happening, you know, right. George Floyd with that. And so walk us through what happened, and I'm sure everybody will be able to resonate.
I'm gonna let Wifey walk that piece.
Okay, so we were, you know, in light of everything that's going on, you know, the kids are watching the news and they hear the conversations going on in the household. So our 11-year-old wanted to speak her voice in what is going on, and she's hearing everything. And we come up from a background where there really is no racism. Like, we love everybody. We have a culture, a background where our family is colorful. So it's diversity.
You name it, we got it.
Right, and everything in between. And so she asked me, she said, Mom, can I go out and I want to just draw something out on the chalk, on the sidewalk with the chalk? And so I said, absolutely. She said, and is it okay if I ride my bike? So I said, yeah. So she took me out to see what she did. And she wrote down on the concrete, Black Lives Matter. So, and she put a little exclamation marks and it was all colorful and nice and pretty. And she asked me if I would sign it. So I said, yeah, I'm going to sign it. So I went and signed it. And then I was okay with that. So we went and got ice cream and came back and the sign was gone. Eric had rinsed off the sign with the water hose as he was watering the grass to erase the sign.
I am guilty.
So immediately I was livid because she's 11, right? We've never ever lived in this time before. And I don't want her to feel like we're taking away her voice. I don't want her to feel like we're muzzling her, and I want her to feel like she can express herself. So I, like, why did you erase that? Like, what's going on? Well, I told Aaliyah I was going to do it. Why? I don't understand. She's 11. She is a young, beautiful African-American young lady. So why would you take her voice away? We're not going out. We're not protesting. We're not all those other things. So she wants to communicate in that way. Why would you erase that? I said, as a father, you're telling her that her voice doesn't matter. And so then he was like, that's not the case. So then he tried to share with me his perspective, because we do live in a predominantly white neighborhood. And so our neighbors, some of them speak, some of them don't speak. We love our neighborhood. We enjoy the school that she goes to.
Some roll their eyes, some don't.
So Eric's perspective behind him erasing it was,
I'm not trying to bring anything to my front door. And as Wifey said, that we have not lived in a time like this, but it's different when you live with us in a different area where you had to deal with it differently. Because when you have certain stuff come to your front door, it's totally different than you walking down the street. Because then now it's okay, now I need to defend. Just like how I saw today, that these kids were just putting up on a bike trail, Black Lives Matter, but the dude come down on the bike, push the kid down, and ripping down all the signs.
Oh, wait, this is on our property, in our driveway.
I'm not done. Your moment.
I have a moment.
You see, so, you know, it's still there with her a little bit.
But oh, I felt it all when y'all were telling me yesterday.
And because the thing is that they don't, how can I put it? When it comes down to the house, I'm the protector. And so it's that, and I don't get me wrong, I understand what her saying that, oh, you're silencing her voice. No, I want you to speak loudly as possible.
It's not at home.
But I need you to speak it in a different way. Because it's just as though, even though I'm listening to the news, when the news are asking people, okay, how do you feel this way? There's still no solution. You're just saying, oh, this will happen. No, be part of a solution. So it's like, because when you look at, I actually, I said, when the school allowed y'all to do your own mock voting, I said, did you take the time to vote? And she was like, yes, Daddy, I did. I said, that is your voice. So the thing is, like, you don't have to bring stuff to the house in order to show that, hey, I am for what's going on. But no, how do you affect change? Even when you look at the things of Martin Luther King, even when you look at, you know, Rosa Parks, everybody, you know, I heard one story that Rosa Parks, she was just simply tired. But then look at what happened, what took place. It's like, yo, okay, we're going to boycott. It was peaceful. Everything dropped. What riot was there? No, we just boycott riding the bus. And so the thing is, they had to look at their income and be like, hold on, we got to change this. Because now everything is dropping. But that happened with no, you know, with a minimum of damage. Nobody had to tell their own stuff. But when you look at, because me, I've been raised in the South.
Okay, I was going to get there. It sounds like you have a perspective there as you were talking. Okay, all right.
Because, you know, I mean, I've been honest. I'm not going to try to go too deep into certain things. But there are times where, yeah, I had to run for the police because I knew what was about to happen. So
and
it's
my,
like,
experience was different. I did not. I was brought up on the other side of the railroad tracks. However, I still had to work harder. I still had to make degrees. I still had to do certain things. So I still did not understand the perspective of muzzling her voice. What he told Aaliyah to do, she has a, we have the paint on her wall in her room has the chalk paint. He told her to go to her room and do the chalk paint. That's not the option. She's still not getting her voice out. Yes, that's a way for her to express herself, but I still feel like we muzzled her voice. Now she is, for everybody listening, she is completely okay with it. Now we had a big discussion about this. What was it, Wednesday night?
A passionate discussion.
Oh my gosh. I mean, to the point our 20-year-old, he's doing something different about it. Like it's a conversation in the household where I don't think we agree with the violent rioting because we've experienced racism on two different platforms.
Right.
So for him growing up, it was one way. I experienced it in the corporate America. So it's very different. So his experiences, you know, with.
But see, the thing is, when you have to come to fisticuffs because you're trying to defend, that's a part. I had 8 fights in high school. And out of the 8 fights, only one of them was against a Black guy.
Okay, so now let's put that into context because I understand, you know, just in the context when we were talking, you grew up in Florida.
Right.
And in Florida, in a lot of places down south, I mean, when I was in junior high, middle school, junior high school, in South Carolina, we went through something similar. So you had to go basically through race fights, physical race fights.
Yes, sir. It was crazy because during the time where the white kids were, it was February. It's pretty much when it all really kicked off. During Black History Month. And so Black History Month, there was a Black History Assembly. So then the parents sent in letters saying they didn't want their kids to attend the assembly. Well, of course, we got upset because, like, yo, y'all make us go to y'all's assembly. Nah, then if that's a problem, and so it kicked off from there. So it's like, it didn't matter. You turn the corner, you know what I'm saying? It's like, yo, I hate to say it like this, but...
Right. You got a little extra with it.
You're literally fighting to go home, to make it home. Because it was at one point, I had to go to the office. They called the police out. You talk about a conference room, table full of guns coming out of their cars and our cars. So it was all out. You talking an all out battle. I couldn't even just walk down the hall before I had to throw hands. Come on, you didn't finna stab me, Slim. I'm finna put you down. But that's what I'm saying. These are the things that they didn't have to deal with. And so I understand, you know, I understand everything that's going on today. Don't get me wrong. I can't riot. I can't go out and stand against people that have arms and that's, you know, no, because I'm looking for something to happen. I mean, I'm just going to be honest. Because I haven't seen even way back in the day, it was still peaceful, but then they bring out the fire hose. So when you look at, we've been doing a peaceful protest, but everything else seems to still take place, but then nothing happens. It's just like you had more casualties of Black men doing this whole riot thing. Why? Because these are still people that are still trying to go home. So how can I affect change? And so I was telling the league, I said, babe, there's more than one way to draw attention on you. I said, babe, you have a YouTube page. I said, you can put Black Lives Matter on your chalkboard and put the camera in front of you and say what you gotta say. We can put it on all your platforms.
Okay, because now somebody hearing that could say, well, isn't she still bringing the attention to herself? But I think that what you're saying is you don't want it to come to your front yard in the terms of perhaps a cross burning or some physical things that you now have to go defend your family and bring the fisticuffs or whatever kind of means necessary to defend your family. Am I hearing that correctly?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes, sir. And I never considered that because, like I said, the way I grew up, it was, this is our home, our property. This is the way we're expressing ourselves. So I never considered we're bringing danger to the house by just expressing ourselves.
I don't have no problem expressing, but then when it started coming to an area to where I have to defend, like, come on. Because then there's another way. You say, well, daddy, things need to change. Okay, how are we going to play our part for things to change? By saying, oh, Black Lives Matter, I got you. Don't get me wrong. Yes, Black Lives Matter. I'm with all of it. Don't get me wrong. Please don't misunderstand. But it's totally different when you have actually lived through it. When I say live through it, yes, like there's been a lot more casualties than what the newspaper has put out, the media has put out. It's been a lot more casualties than that. But it's like, come on, I don't want to bring that. I don't want to put my family in jeopardy because I know, as far as in my local assembly, I'm doing my part to affect change. I'm doing my part for those that I'm able to reach to encourage, hey, go be better, go do better. That's affecting change.
Right.
So it's like it's more than just, hey, talking about the problem. We all have been talking about the problem for 400 years. Okay, what's the solution? So those that have been making solution have come up with a solution and they've done it. Okay, now a lot of them, you know, there's a lot of change because if they didn't start working on the solution back then, we wouldn't be where we are now.
Right.
So it just means, okay, we got a lot more barriers to knock down to keep going.
I get all of that. I do. I just felt like that, like I said, and I still feel that we've muddled her voice in a way to where, and she says that she understands it, but in years to come, will this affect her?
Okay.
I just want her to know that we aren't muzzling her voice. And as parents, I just think that it's really important that we don't muzzle her voice and that she feels like she has a voice in this time.
Okay, well, just so everybody know, we are 100% live here on Facebook Live, 9:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, talking to Eric and Tamika Thompson of The Marriage Takeover, and we are just recapping a conversation that we had the other day when they were talking about how their daughter, Aaliyah, she wanted to express herself as it pertains to all of what she's seeing. She's 11 years old and really trying to comprehend and understand the complexities of what we have been, all of us have been trying to figure out our entire lives. And so she wrote Black Lives Matter in their driveway, and Tamika didn't have a problem with it, but Eric came home, he saw it and he used a water hose and he rinsed it away. And because he was not feeling it. So I don't know if anybody out there in the chat, if you have some thoughts about it, please feel free to, or the comments. I'm not on Zoom. Well, I am on Zoom actually, but kind of sort of on Zoom. I'm on streaming through Zoom. But if you have any thoughts about it, because there are a lot of opinions on how to deal with this. And so I guess, like I said, when you two were talking about it, I was conflicted because I understood both sides perfectly. It was like, I understood Eric. I was like, yeah, you don't want to bring anything to your house because now that means, because it's something about you don't want to have to put somebody down for affecting your household. And it's like, you know, we really don't have any problem doing that, especially if you bring in a certain kind of heat our way. So right. I get it.
No,
I get it.
Problem, sir.
Right. It's like if you bring the wrong kind of heat, you know, this it's like, so you don't want anything to get triggered. There you go. You don't want right. You don't want to go back to high school and get nothing triggered, and now you going to jail because
exactly.
So I get that, but then I hear what Tamika saying as far as the muzzling effect. And I think that's part of the complexities of what we deal with in this country, because, you know, on one hand, it's like we're told, okay, this is how I've come to understand a lot of things. And so, you know, as everybody hears, it's just understand the context. It's like if white folks or Europeans want to do it, they just do whatever they want to do. If they want to come up in your country, bomb your country, wave a flag and say, this is what we're going to do, they do it. They make up lies. They manipulate. They scheme. If it's oil, if it's weapons of mass destruction, if it's whatever, they do whatever they want to do and they do it. And so if they want to teach their history, they teach it the way they want to teach it.
Right.
And then, but for us, we just supposed to go along with it. The minute we raise up, they tell us to hush up now. So I get that part. Right. It's like, it's the conflicts because you're like, ugh! You know, it's like, what do I do? And I think what we hear is the cry of people saying that. It was a picture a friend of mine sent me from Ivory Coast, which is a French colony. And they sent me pictures of the people protesting in Paris. So it's like something awakened and everybody came out of the wherever they came from. And the young lady, she wrote it in French and said, we are the children of the slaves you didn't kill or couldn't kill.
Right.
And I was, you know, so it's so many layers. So where did you all, so what has been the resolution here?
So we decided to agree to disagree. So the only thing that is left of the Black Lives Matter on our driveway are the exclamation points.
Well, not now because it's raining, so they're going to wash over here right now.
Are the exclamation points that she put at the end. And then one of the comments that's coming through on Facebook is saying, I agree that there needs to be change, but why is a narrative that we as Black Americans must be the change? So, and that's, I think, too, a part of, like, that's a major question. So I feel like we're making our child change so that we can conform.
One thing is, it's not making her too comfortable.
Y'all got it going on down there. y'all don't stir it up down there. Y'all done stirring up them old Confederates. Them Confederate soldiers getting mad now.
And we just that tornado horn, then we're not
there. Nah, that's the Confederate. That's Robert E. Lee coming back up out the grave, coming at me. them jokers turning over. They all flipped up and they gonna come back with their little muskets and all that kind of stuff. They're like, hold on, this is not supposed to happen here. They're rising up. I'm sorry, Eric. My apologies.
But the thing is, it's like, okay, so what do we do? My thing is, we teach Aaliyah, okay, if you're going to have a platform, utilize the platform. Because, you know, just like you said, I hate to, you know, say this, I guess put it out there, but it's just like the things that you're doing, Jake. You're actually bringing back what you are learning and experiencing what knows to be true. So it's like, okay, but no. So now, okay, I'm here with a person that is understanding everything that what the schools are, what the system is not teaching us here, but there are still artifacts, there are still, you know, things that has been passed down from generation to generation that's keeping it alive. So it's like, here, this is what you understand. So then as you continue to grow and you get that platform, you can affect change for your generation. And so it's more than just saying, oh, Black Lives Matter. Okay, how do they matter? Because I'm all about action versus just writing it down and saying, oh, I did my part. No, what's gonna happen when all of this die down? Do you think that everything's just gonna change? No, you still gotta keep pushing.
Right, and I agree with that. So I'm not, and I wanna make it very clear.
It's not
a black over white or, you know, power to the people type conversation or thing that we had.
It is power to the people.
It's about the power over hatred, because that's taught, right? Racism is taught in your household. So 2 years ago, we moved to this new neighborhood. And well, 4 years ago, we moved to the new neighborhood. 2 years ago, I had to have a conversation with Aaliyah because the N-word came up in the library conversation at our school. So these are 8 and 9 year olds, and they're reading a book. It was a South African book that was not properly moderated by the substitute teacher that was reading, that wasn't properly managing the group. And what she did was she opened up the conversation to let 8 and 9 year olds have the thought process of what the N-word was.
Right, right.
And so here you are having 8 and 9 year olds sitting in a circle. She left the area to go and talk to the librarian, left the area. Now 8 and 9 year olds sitting in a group trying to figure out what the N-word is. So based on their household, what they've been taught, that's the N-word.
Oh,
so
wow.
When she came home to me and asked, Mommy, what is the N-word?
Now, by now, she's 8, 9?
She's 8.
8, 9. She has not heard the N-word.
Never, ever heard
it. Because we don't believe in calling each other
right
that the N-word.
Right.
Why? Because if it was disgraceful then,
it's disgraceful.
It's still
now.
Disgraceful now.
Right.
So we want to get mad with the white man for saying it, but they've been doing this for generations. So my thing, if we're trying to kill it, why do we keep calling each other the same thing when we're not there? So that tells me that some of them are still bound in our mind.
So like I said, it's taught. So being that it was taught, we had to have that conversation to say, well, what do you think the N-word, like, where is that coming from? What was the context behind it? So I don't overreact, you know, what's going on? She told me the whole situation, what happened. And so we had to have that race conversation with her at 8 years old in 2020, where we thought we would never have to do that. So, and then let her know that all white people aren't bad.
Right.
Because it's the reality that we're living in. And so now to come fast forward 2 years later, we're telling her Black Lives, she can't write Black Lives Matter driveway. So now I'm conflicted to say, well, baby, your voice matters and you are powerful, you are royalty, you are all these beautiful, like wonderful and amazing things, but you just can't write that in the sidewalk.
No.
Or the driveway.
In the driveway.
I'm sorry, the driveway. So we have continued to agree to disagree, but I backed down just a little. Because Aaliyah was okay with that. She had a conversation. She is extremely intelligent.
Right.
And so she felt like there were other avenues that she could contribute.
Right.
She attended a Black Girl Code camp last year, and they gave her a t-shirt. She wore the t-shirt to school this year, and one of her white classmates said that was racist because she had Black Girls Code on a t-shirt. I never got a call from the teacher. I never got anything. So I understand how people could be offended by that. But at the same time, I want to make sure that she has her voice. I don't want her to live her life trying to feel like she's got to appease other people.
And I told her when they came home, I said, baby, you can wear that shirt again.
And again and again.
So, see, it's that's different. When I say it's different, because she's just saying, hey, black girls code. Meaning what? We're smart. We're intelligent. We know that we can do certain things that the other person, the other part, don't think that we can do.
But
so
I'm
a rocket.
Black Lives Matter is saying that Black Lives Matter.
But see, this is what I'm saying. Yes, we do matter, but this is my thing. I am not, it's like I told like this. I say, when things get to blazing, if you helping me, who's going to be covering the kid? So if things get to blazing, so now here I am. Here I am.
You mean in the cross blazing in the front yard?
Okay. Right. And I said, it's not what she wrote. It was the attention that it was going to bring. And that was the one thing. Listen, I don't want to muzzle her mouth. I don't. I want her to be able to speak up, say what she believes in, and move it. But I think that it's best for me to at least show her the best way to do it.
Well, let me ask you this question, because as you're talking, it made me start thinking. So, because you know, you see a whole lot of ethnic groups that are marching and protesting. So how would you feel, or what if, because now white folks are walking around Black Lives Matter and Asian and everybody's saying it, it's loud, you know, and I'm almost concerned that it might become like a little fad thing. I'm peeping it. I'm just concerned for a second. But
we're in the same thought, sir.
Okay. Well, what happens if if the white people in the neighborhood, they write Black Lives Matter, would it then be more acceptable at that point?
But let me ask you a question. What is the difference between, we talk about an open carry state, a light-skinned fella carrying an AR-15. They pull out the whole gun squad for him. 5 minutes later, same white guy walked down the street carrying an AR-15. The officer just pulls over and talks to him. That's the difference. See, there's a threat with, it's a threat with us. It means something totally different with us. But
gotcha.
Coming on the other side, there is no threat. Because you look at it. I'm not saying that white cops don't kill white people. That's not what I'm saying.
Because they do. They do. They beat each other down, too. I've seen some stuff.
Right. Yep. But what get publicized? So
right.
you have a guy he get beat up for a speeding ticket.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? But he still get locked up. But then you got a dude that goes inside of a church and shoot up 9 people. And you take him to Burger King?
Yeah.
Come on now.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's still different on who puts it out. If I put out there, Jesus loved everybody. You know what the funny thing is? It's still going to be looked at different coming from us versus my counterpart down the street.
But now, then I've heard some people say that the DC sniper, they took care of him. And when they caught him, they didn't shoot him. So it's all these, like it's these layers. But you know, I get your point, Eric. It's I think what I hear is you being a father and a husband and a protector of your home and not wanting to bring the fight to your front door. So it's not
right.
Like, I don't hear somebody who's afraid of the confrontation. It's like, it's right. No, I don't sense that.
Home.
I don't sense that at all. I don't sense it's almost the other way around. It's like you know where the confrontation can go, but Tamika's like, I just came. I came from the side of the tracks where we just said whatever, we just did whatever, and so so I guess you all are still having a conversation. That's what it sounds like.
Well, we decided agree to disagree, but one of the things that it did open us up to was to really be able to have that conversation of racism in the home.
Okay.
Like to our children. Like what do you want to do to affect change?
Right.
Everybody wants to affect change. Everybody wants to do something different. So what can you do in your space? Aaliyah, you're 11. What can you do in your space? EJ, what can you do in your space? He's now reaching out and interviewing Black males that are successful, that have contributed life. And he's now posting that on social media platforms because he wants people to see that that is like all Black people aren't thugs. All Black people aren't, you know, that we're successful, that we can do things, that we can make change, that we can be an impact. So it's really about what can you do at your age, in your space, what you're doing to make a difference. And that was kind of what we agreed to. So she has said time and time again, Mommy, I'm okay. I understand Dad's point of view. So Mommy is I'm throwing the white flag.
The fire's calmed down. The blazing is calmed down a little bit.
Now, I might pay for this later, Jay. So if I come knock on your door, on the table.
It's raining outside. I'm going
to tell you, like, this same person is more concerned about Black Lives Matter, but Eric ended up going to a predominantly white school.
But here's why. And that's a great point that you bring up. But
you might pay for that one, brother.
Here's why, though, because I, in corporate America, as a recruiter in human resources, I've seen directors and hiring managers turn away applicants that have gone to HBCUs. I have seen the applicants, and I have fought to advocate for those applicants, but they won't even consider them for an interview. So you know what I saw? What I said? I said, well, you know what you're going to do? You're not going to go to an HBCU because I want to make sure you have every opportunity possible. I've seen the directors and the hiring managers turn away an applicant because they have an ethnic ethnic name. Like, I've seen that.
Like, like Shaquita or something, they would see, like, okay.
Right.
Putting that into context so people understood.
Mercedes, and, like, I've seen it. And so it's a matter of if your name is not Eric and Sarah and Elizabeth, you may not get considered for an interview. And your resume is that first interview. So if they don't consider you, after looking through your resume, you can have the same qualifications, you can have the same experience, but if they see that you have any type of African-American fraternity or sorority, guess what? They're passing you by. I've seen it. I've advocated for it. So when my son had the opportunity to go to school, I wanted to make sure he got the best opportunity possible.
Wow.
So I did.
That's a
real... But my question was, do lives really matter?
They do. And the reason why they do is because they're going to be put into positions and they're going to be able to go and make effective change based on their experiences. So Eric's resume won't be passed over because of his education. It'll be passed over if he doesn't have if he lacks the experience. So if he gets into a position, he will then be able to affect change. Once he becomes a manager, then he can start to affect change by hiring qualified African Americans.
Woo! Well, I tell you, this is good here tonight.
Boy, you see what I'm talking about?
No, it's just good because a lot of times, you know, it's and you know, obviously there'll be people on the other side who say, well, that the fact that they went to an HBCU opened the door for them to help them because they were a part of a network or fraternity or sorority. But when you say that working in HR and working in the corporate world, you have a perspective that a lot of people don't have and because they don't work in that world. But I didn't know it was that deep. Probably because I'm just an entrepreneur, a hustler. So I get out here but it's like, but when you say that, that's real. And, it hit in a different way, you know, when you hear it like that. Go ahead. So he's not going to pay for that later. Eric's not going to pay for that later.
No. That was good. That was okay. I'm okay for that. They can come for me for that because I've seen it.
Thanks for being my mediator.
I'm trying to be a mediator here. You know, just trying to, you know.
I've seen a director hire his stripper with no experience, with no education, bring them into the corporation, have them in
on the pole. Got the pole for him right there and everything.
Have them in the role for 6 months and then promote them to a higher position and give them a salary.
Well, see, he probably had some other fringe benefits working, and you feel what I'm saying? That's how they do that.
What I'm saying
was very good for him.
I've seen that happen where they pass over an African American resume because they said, "Oh, they're not going to fit the culture." That was what they started doing. Instead of you meeting the qualifications, they changed it to you don't fit the culture. Well, what is the culture?
What is the culture? Whoa. That's
what
real.
What is the culture?
And who controls the culture? Back in there. You're back. I was telling him, I said, when we go live, like I said, normally, like sometimes I'll do recorded interviews. This is like, it is 9:56 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We're here live talking to Eric and Tamika Thompson of The Marriage Takeover. We're talking about racism conversations in the home. My name is Jay Cameron. And so just thank you all for watching. So we're just talking. We've had a lively conversation. And so afterwards, if you get a chance to rewind and watch, make sure you share. And you can go to their website and see everything that they have going on with The Marriage Takeover. So now you were about to say something before you, before the big question mark came up on the screen.
Oh, I don't remember what it was.
You were talking about HR and what you've seen, because I think that a lot of people don't, I think a lot of times we know it, but you spoke to something, you all mentioned something that was really key about affecting change. And when you're in position, you can affect change. When you own things, you can affect change. Right. When you can hire other qualified African Americans, but you can also hire qualified people in general, you know, wherever they come from. But it's like, if we're out of position, then, and if we're always in this subservient, passive, I'ma just do what they tell me position, I'm just take what they give me, I need to be happy for what I have because I don't deserve nothing in the first place, because you know this is my lot in life. I mean, there are a lot of ways people think about all of this, and it's deep.
Hold on, time out. When I graduated college, I graduated with a 3.3 GPA. I still struggled to get to where I wanted to get to.
Okay.
And I was just like, you know what? This is crap. This is crap. Right. And so, but what I did was I began to venture out pretty much. Okay, what else? How can I get myself to the place I want to be? So all I did was, okay, you're asking me to do this. You're going to keep passing me over, but I'm going to show you I don't need you. And so I began to get my hustle on. When I say get my hustle on in a, how can I say, in a more business manner, if you will. Because, yeah, I can't get my words out now. But started a company, Next Level Solutions, with me and Watson. So I'm working on a job, but I'm using my lead to build my clientele. So it got to the point to where my supervisor asked me, well, do you have lead for that? And I had to go to the, I know I was, it was very wrong for me to do this, but my supervisor asked me, because I requested leave. Well, she asked me, I don't have leave for you. I had to make a deposit that day. So I took my deposit and I threw it on her desk. I said, do that look like I need your leave? Do I look like I need leave? And she said, oh, but after that, there was no problem.
Now that might not have been the best way to handle it, but all I'm saying is, he had that experience and that thought process, and we had to change the perspective so that he could position himself differently.
Mindset has to change.
People can see that. And then when you have that negative energy, when you have that negative thought process, people can sense that.
Right.
And nobody really wants to deal with that, because you can have better. You can get to those opportunities. Does racism exist in corporate America? Yes. It does. But can you overcome that? Yes, you can.
You can.
And I think that as you say that, because I've seen foolishness in corporate America. I spent some time in corporate America. I've seen it on the sales when I used to be a salesman, and the one thing that and it's like they almost kind of tell you that you're not going to go far. I remember when I was working for a very popular pizza chain, and they were looking for that token black. And I, you know, there were times I didn't have a problem being a token. You know, if that's what you want me to be, I'll be the token. But I got my own agenda. You think you pimping me, but I'm pimping you for real. So if you think I'll play dumb, but for real, I'm pimping you and you don't even know it. You think I'll be silent. Now I will not say yes, sir. Yes, sir, massa. I'm not gonna do that.
I ain't going that far.
But I'm not gonna go that far with it. But I'll sit there and act like I don't know what's going on, and I'm learning the system. I'm watching everything that's happening. And I'm saying, okay, but what they wanted to do is, they were having managers, and they wanted these managers. And basically the manager was kind of like in a position where they were pimping the manager. But there was a son of a very popular senator from a southern state back in the day. And and so he was able to acquire all of these franchises. I'm trying not to say the name of the place. And he was able to acquire it, but his father was loaded. And so I'm looking at this and I'm seeing how he would treat me as if I was like, you know, the lowly black guy that's in here that's just trying to, you know, just deliver pizza. But I was like, I was learning the system. I was doing what I needed to do. And then when they decided they wanted to start playing games, it was like I had other opportunities. And so I think that for us, what we have to recognize is, one, taking advantage of the advantages that we do have, because there are a lot of advantages. We're not this, you know, these poor destitute people. If you take the GDP of all of the African Americans in America, it's like the 15th largest country in the world. If we took the $1.5 trillion and invested it, it's like, we talk about the income disparities in America. So you might say, okay, white America has all of this money compared to black America, but black America next to the rest of the world has all kinds of resources. So, but we don't know that because they condition us to feel as though we don't have anything, or condition us to feel as though we need the government to bail us out or something, or we need the government to survive. But once I understood the power that I had with my resources, and that it was really in America for me today, and this might bother some people, but I'm almost 50 years old. America's just a resource for me, because it's like, this is my resource. Since my ancestors used to be a resource for it, and I've been a resource for it for so long, it has now become a resource for me. And so what it does is provides me the ability to do a lot of things that I might not be able to do other places. Now, I love the beauty of the country and the mountains and the fresh air, and I love all of that. But as far as the system is concerned, and how the system has oppressed, and understanding that nothing from a systemic standpoint, the foundation of this country, since the inception of this country, that mentality hasn't changed. Although there have been changes from a legal perspective, we're starting to see how so much of this is now evolving. Oh, y'all are back. Okay, there you go. Got you back. All right. So how so much all of this is impacting us. So, I mean, as I'm hearing both of you talk, it's like we're all navigating this. Wherever we are, you know, Tamika, you're in corporate America, you're navigating it. Eric, when you came out, you know, you're fighting the black man's battle, you know, and how we gotta hustle, you know, on some level. You know, some of us don't, but a lot of us do. And it's not, and that's not that that's all bad, because it builds a lot of character in us. So I appreciate all of everything that you all are saying, because we are, I'm sad that it took this for this conversation to reach this level in the world, but I'm glad that it's happening. And what I'm hoping is that we will understand the real power that we have in this system. That's what I'm hoping. I'm hoping we just don't go back to, you know, just being the Chitlin circuit. You know, I'm hoping we say, you know what, let me learn about my money and my resources. Let me understand the system that we're in. Let me educate myself. Let me value education. Even if let me take advantage of the education that I do have in front of me and master that. Let me go and do something. So So, wow. I didn't know, you know, I knew we were going to have a good discussion, but I didn't know it was going to, I didn't know we were going to go down HR and you know, all of that. So what would you say? What would you say to young people who are seeing this, who this is like all new to them? They're like, it's like that out here, you know, because some of our kids don't know, they haven't been exposed to it. What words of advice would you offer to them as far as moving forward? What can they do to affect change and have a lasting impact?
You want to go first, or you want me to?
You can go. That's a great question.
For everything that's going on, because I'm a trainer, and I train a lot of the youth that's actually going off to college, those that are still in school, and with everything going on, my question to them was, how are you going to make a change? Are you just going to say, oh, Black Lives Matter and just keep walking? How are you going to make a change? I said, I asked because some of them just turned 18. I said, did anybody vote? I said, because if you didn't vote, you don't have them. You can't say anything because you never voice your opinion with your vote. I said, so with everything that's going on, I understand that all of this is new to you. I said, but what's going on is old to me. So I had to do something different in order to effect change. I said, so it started with my local assembly. That's where it starts, because if they're not, if whoever's in place ain't doing nothing, guess what? It's time for you to go. Because I'm gonna be so honest with you, just in the area that I lived in some years ago, I voted for a certain sheriff. When that sheriff took office, change took place.
Right.
And it has changed, and he is still on top of it. And so that's what I'm saying. But what about the other ones that's not doing whatever? Okay, I'm still gonna make sure I put my voice, but then what do I do? So, you know, we done set up a meeting with our commission. So this is where we begin to make change. Because it's not like, oh, this one, no, how can we be of service?
Right.
Because now it's like, okay, because sometimes people are now trying to find things to do. But if we don't have the right credentials or even the right mindset, we'll miss opportunities like that. Because now it's all about what you're gonna do for me. It's cool. I'm gonna be of service, because one time, guess what? It's gonna turn around to us like, hey, what do you think about this? Or how about this? Now I'm a fucking change, because now it's gonna give opportunities to other people. I said, but if you're gonna just go to school but not gonna put forth your best, then how can you position yourself to get the right job? And I said, well, I didn't tell him this part, but I have, like, my brother, he's in corporate America, but he's opened up a platform, a board, to where now he can actually go and recruit Black people going to
HBCU,
historically Black colleges.
You gonna mess around and get your Black card taken? You don't know how to say that now. I'm about to say, bro. Ooh.
You just snatch it.
I tell people, you can't even take my Black card. I said, I've been Black so long and lived through so much. It's like you said, you can have it. They're going to take my Black card, all the stuff I done lived with for almost 50 years. What you talking about? You tell. I'm going to take your Black card. Like, whatever. Right.
So it's like, fellas, make sure that you're in the right place to affect the change. Because if you want things to change, it starts with you.
Right. Be the change you want to see. And to the younger individuals, like I said with Aaliyah, it hit me in my heart. It's a matter of, you have a voice. I remember the very first time she wanted to vote. She's not even 18, but she understands that makes a difference when we were going to the elections 4 years ago. And she said, Mommy, can I go with you to vote? And I said, well, you're not old enough, but you can absolutely come with me. And what she did and what they allowed her to do, which I'm so grateful, they allowed her, I told her to write down on a piece of paper. They gave her a little small piece of notebook paper, let her write down who she wanted to vote for, and they took it as if she was turning in her ballot. Whatever you can do, affect that change where you are. And know that everybody is not bad. Know that this is not, you know, a hatred. I don't want you to fester and to hold on to hatred. And to the parents, have the conversation with your children.
Right.
They're talking. They're watching. They're listening. Have that conversation. And then even to open up the conversation with your friends and listen into those conversations.
Right.
Let them know that it's okay for their voice to be heard. Give them opportunity to different avenues. Okay, so for Aaliyah, no, you can't go out and write Black Lives Matter, you know, out on the side on the driveway, but you can do it on your chalkboard. You can do it on your YouTube channel. How else can we foster this conversation? What else would you like to be able to accomplish? How else can we help, you know, you think about the culture? Why do Black Lives Matter to you? Open up that conversation so that they fully understand and they're just not taking bits and pieces of the news and what you're saying to develop their own thought process.
Right.
Help them to manage and to monitor that.
And if I may, Jay, even for the couples that are there, everybody has a different background.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So even take that moment to even understand one another, because by me talking with Aaliyah about mine, it was something my wife didn't know.
Right.
And I was like, oh, she was like, I did not know that.
And we both black. We're
in
the same city.
But we had a railroad track. Anyway.
Right. That railroad track is that's right. Red line. That could be that red line they put up. That red line. Well, I tell you, people just don't know. I'm behaving myself tonight, but go ahead.
Right. But have this stuff, and there's the biracial couples right now. Like I said, I have white, Chinese, Hispanic, you name it. I have it in my family. And it's just the conversations that are coming up where you wouldn't think about that and how other people are perceiving. Like, it's nothing for me to walk into a Chinese restaurant and be comfortable because I understand the culture. I know that what they're cooking at restaurant, they don't eat it. They have their own special diet that they have. So understanding that, understanding their culture, understanding their customs is very different from the African-American culture.
And that's a whole different, that you said something right there that caught my attention. It's like, what they cooking in there, they don't eat. I'm like.
They don't eat. And guess
what? We went with the family.
And guess where they are? In every African-American community, guess where there is, what there is? Chinese restaurant.
Yeah.
They don't even eat their food.
Yeah. That's a different kind of conversation now.
Right. But it was to say that it's a diverse background. So whatever position you're in, be open to having that conversation without being angry.
Right.
Yeah. Like, be open to having that conversation with empathy.
Right.
Be open to having that conversation with trying to understand what it may be like. You may not ever know what it's like. Like our spiritual parents. White and black couple, love them to life.
Love them to life.
Some of our best friends are white. Love them to life.
Right.
But understanding what the differences are, because there are some differences.
There are some differences.
Yeah, I get it. I mean, I tell people all the time, I've had white men do more for me than my own black father.
Right.
And so it's like, there's no way I can walk around with a chip on my shoulder. I have to look at the individual. I recognize what's going on. I recognize the systemic problems, but I don't put the systemic issues on individuals, because a lot of times those individuals, I can think about Hispanic people, Asian people, white people who have been there when my own black people have been MIA, I mean, or trying to tear me down, or the very ones that's trying to destroy everything I'm trying to build. I mean, and I'm sitting there like in the people who will come, and they're not doing it as, oh, this pitiful black soul, let me come rescue him with my whiteness. It was just human beings to say, this is right. No, I'm saying, because, you know, so, so it's like, these were just human beings who saw something in another human being, and they came along. So I can't walk around, you know, looking at white folks like, oh, you're the enemy and the white devil and all this other kind of stuff, because I know some black devils. I know some black devils all over the place, you know, so it's like, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, and that's what we're teaching our children. It's about character.
Right.
Yeah. It has nothing to do with the color of your skin, but understand that the color of your skin, you may face some obstacles.
Right.
And here's why you face those obstacles. But it is absolutely about the character. Because for a long time, I didn't like to do business with black people. You want to know why? Because they were slowful, they were late, they didn't follow through.
Well, I know why.
It was the culture. And so now that we're ready to make a change and we have this transition, one of the things that I'll say to us as a people is, let's hold each other accountable.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, we want to be able to invest in the businesses, and we want to be able to help the culture, but let's hold each other accountable.
Right.
Let's make sure that we're showing up on time. Let's make sure that we are following through. Let's make sure that we're offering good customer service. Let's make sure that we're offering good, solid products and services. And we're not trying to take people over for money.
Right.
Yes, you need to pay a fee. But at the same time, don't just try to pay the high fee now that you know that you're going to have more business coming.
Come on.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They see you. Y'all keep unpacking these layers of this thing, because it's like I get joy out of supporting black businesses, quality black businesses. I want to take my money to black businesses. I mean, I go out of my way. I'm one of those ones that if I see a culture vulture in a neighborhood, I'm the first one like, oh, here we go. Here's this person coming in that doesn't even represent the neighborhood. But then when I see those businesses that are slack, like you said, and don't do what they want to charge you the highest price, want to go for, and yeah, brother, you, why aren't you trying to look out for the brother, man? But brother, bring the service the right way. I'll give you all of my money. Just do it the right way. You know, don't try to rip me off and try to guilt me into giving you money. If you deliver quality service, then it won't be a problem. You know, but I mean, it's I mean, what I love is, here's what I'm excited about. I'm excited about all of the solid. I'm a part of a business group with black business people who are doing almost 8 figures a year. Mm-hmm. They are first class. I mean, and I needed to be around those types of people, because you get you get the low level, and you get that in all ethnic groups, but you get that, because that's the culture I'm familiar with. You get the ones that don't handle their business. So I said, I need to be around some black excellence. I need to be around some people that's really, you know, striving to do this thing on the right level. And I found it, and it's taking me to the next level. It's and so that's another part of it. You know, we inspire each other when we do what we need to do. And so that's my goal. I said, well, I want, you know, as I'm in this phase of broadening myself, you know, when I say, so as I'm doing that, it's kind of like, I want other black business people to understand, to know that you can do this thing on a excellent level, or whatever it is they're doing. You know, if it's a conversation you're having, you can be excellent with it. And so that's why I'm glad to have this conversation with you all, because when I heard you all talking, it triggered something in me. And it triggered the conflict, because I felt both sides of it. And I think a lot of us are navigating the conflicts. And so I want to thank you all for just spending some time with us tonight. And I know that those who have been watching have probably felt a variety of different emotions. Because if they felt the conflicts that I felt, I know they were like, woo, yeah, oh, I don't know if I'm feeling that. Yeah, but that is true, though. Yeah, but they got a point. But what we do about it? See what I told you? You know, so it's so many different levels. But I think the cool part about it is that we're willing to take responsibility for our own actions. And as we are willing to take responsibility for our own actions, that's how we impact the change. I tell people, they say, well, how do you protest? I said, I've been protesting for years. I said, so I've been protesting through productions, through seminars, through mentorship. I said, because I understood that if I could empower and educate somebody, then if I can help that one person change, then they'll affect somebody else. And I said, so I've been marching. I was at the Million Man March. I was there. I saw, even though I might not be into all of, you know, what Farrakhan has said, you know, some of his stuff I haven't been feeling, but some of it I have been feeling. He been in the pocket. I've been like, that's right. You know, so, but some of it's like, nah, I don't know about that one, but that's with anybody, you know, you're not going to always be feeling, but it wasn't even about Farrakhan. And that's what I tell people, because some people they're like, nah, I ain't going to that because it's Farrakhan. I said, I wasn't going because of Farrakhan. I said, I wanted to see if this would be possible, where you could get, whether it was 500,000 brothers or 1 million brothers or however many brothers they said was there. I wanted to see, as a young black man in America, that brothers could get together and not be fighting and killing each other and tearing each other down and going through all of that stuff. And when I stood there in October 1995 and I stood on the National Mall, and I was like, wow. Again, it had nothing to do with Farrakhan. It had nothing to do with anybody on that stage. It was what I saw and how we interacted with each other. And it was the first time and the last time that I had seen that type of interaction with us is black men in that space. And so I don't know what all was happening, but I was like, wow. And the resounding message back then was to take responsibility for your own community. That's what I kept hearing everybody say. You take responsibility. You take responsibility for yourself. And once you take responsibility for yourself, then everybody else you influence, it will have an impact that way. And so that was just something I started living by. And that's what I think if we do that, if regardless of where we come from and our background, if we take responsibility for ourselves, then anybody we influence will you know, it'll fall. It will follow. The influence will follow there. So I want to thank you all for joining me tonight. This has been quite a joy. I tell you, we're going to have to do it again. And
we'd love to. Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah.
Oh, no, not a problem. And I know that, you know, something's going to jump off again. So when y'all have like one of them blow up, yelling, screaming, hollering matches, just let me know. We can cover. We can come talk about it. We can resolve it right here. I don't know, you know.
But she called me something she ain't never seen me. So
and,
that's okay.
And because we keep it real, raw, and uncut, I will. Is it okay if I share
that? I don't care. She called me a coward. I called him a coward.
And with the marriage ministry, like I said, we do everything transparent. Helping people to under. We've been married 22 years. Helping people to know that things happen in your marriage. You go through trials. You go through situations. And as different events come, things happen. So this was an event that we had. When I tell you, I never even thought we would even try to have this type of conversation. But in 2020, but because we did, and the conversations got heated, and you can't take back your words. No. So try to be mindful of that, because now it's always going to be something in, you know, the back of his brain. My wife thinks I'm a coward, but I thought that it was a coward because, like I said, I've never experienced racism to the extent that he's experienced it. So I did not, in that moment, take the time out to empathize with what he was saying because it wasn't communicated. So I'm thinking, wait a minute, my reality is you're a coward because this doesn't happen. People aren't going to come here. They aren't going to do this. They aren't going to do that. And in his reality, I've seen what can happen. I'm here to try to protect my family. And I didn't see that reality. So in that space, I did not honor my husband at that time because I was so heated. I called him a coward. And I should not have, but I did.
Oh wow!
When she apologized.
I did apologize.
When she apologized.
I did.
But you know the good thing is, but you know, but the good thing is that somebody else out there is in their marriage right now, and they're not recognizing that, and they're trying to figure out why things are declining. But the fact, Tamika, that you caught it and you say, you know what, I'm seeing this through my lens. He has a different lens, and I'm not empathizing. Then what that did was bring the opportunity for reconciliation in a sense, or healing in a sense, even though it might be etched in his mind. At least what also was etched is the fact that you came back, because that's the thing, because a lot of times people will leave that out there, and now you walking around now next. So with that, you know, hopefully somebody heard that, because a lot of marriages will suffer simply because of what's being said, and then not being willing to apologize. So you were willing to say, all right, you know what? Because sometimes we get to a point where we just see it our way, and then we see it our way, and without considering that there's another way. So I think that was very mature of both of you. And I think that after 22 years, I can't believe you said 22 years, because y'all look like y'all little over 22 yourselves. So I'm trying to figure out what's going on here. So, but you almost got married like straight out of high school.
Straight up.
That's why y'all got the marriage takeover. I get it now. Right? Y'all ought to be doing the marriage ministry and y'all counseling and
we've been through some things.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Hey, it's all in our book that's coming soon.
Yeah. All right, that's right. So everybody, listen, you make sure you all check out and follow Eric and Tamika Thompson, marriagetakeover.com, and find out everything they have going on. They are really cool people, great people. And as you can tell, they tell you they're transparent for sure, and they'll be able to share real life scenarios with you. So if you're going through something in your marriage and you need some real folks to talk to, make sure you reach out to them, and it will, I'm sure, that you will be able to glean from their 22 years of marriage. All right, guys, thank you so much for joining me. We have got to do this again. Y'all know y'all must be real special, because we on here like straight up 10:25 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We are live on Facebook Live. All right.
Thank you so much.
All right, no problem. Y'all have a good evening.
Thank you for tuning in to Marriage Takeover. Connect with us on Facebook at Marriage Takeover.